I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Welcome into another show. This is Wednesday, August the 26th, 2015. I'm Brad Locke here with W. Derek Russell. How are you today? Fine, sir.
W stands for wonderful. I'm wonderful. How are you doing? Actually, it doesn't stand for wonderful. That'd be weird.
For the purposes of this broadcast, it does.
Oh, okay. Well, then we're good then. How's everything going on your side of the desk this morning? Well, that's what the D stands for in Brad D. Locke.
Had a late night last night because election stuff. Which we'll get to later in the show.
Yeah.
We'll have Bobby Harrison on here.
Things to cover right now. We've got Emma Crawford, our Daily Journal education reporter, in the house. How are you doing, Emma?
Doing well. How are y'all?
I'm doing excellent. We are going to talk today about the Create Career Expo, working with the Toyota Wellspring Education Fund. Tell us a little bit about this. This is a neat thing.
Well, it's October 6th and 7th, and it's for school districts. There's 33 schools that are going to be there. It's going to be really cool. It's basically like career day, but really, really like high energy and interactive. And they're bringing all kinds of businesses and professionals in to kind of help kids get a better idea of what careers are out there for them.
It sounds like it's more than just your normal, here's a 10 by 10 space with a banner. I
mean, yeah.
You got a helicopter coming in for this.
They want to bring a helicopter. Things. I think a care flight helicopter to kind of show kids what, you know, that's one part of being in the medical field is the helicopters, which is pretty cool.
I never had a helicopter at a career day growing up. I feel like I got robbed.
I might have done something differently had there been a
perhaps so. Helicopter. Perhaps we would have done bigger and better things.
So this is going to encompass about 3,500 different 8th graders, correct?
Yes.
And this is going to be where?
At the Bancorp South Arena.
Later in October. Branching off of, is inspired by another event, where they got this idea from.
Yeah, it's called Pathways to Possibilities, and it's another career expo, but it's on the coast. Mm-hmm. And they actually, some people from Create went down there to kind of do some research, and they went to the career expo and saw what they were doing and thought that, you know, this would be a good thing to bring up here to this part of the state.
Just going down some of the list of the potential people that are going to be there, we've got North Pacific Medical Center, Toyota, NASA.
Yeah, NASA is going to be there.
Will there be a shuttle?
I don't know if they can fit one of those in the arena, but
if it's between helicopter and shuttle,
I might show up.
I wouldn't be surprised. From what I've heard, it's supposed to be a big thing. But NASA's going to be there, and they're going to simulate not NASA, but the hospital is going to simulate like a car accident response. Mm. So they're going to show kids like from the time that somebody responds to the car accident all the way through, you know, rehab for those patients, what all of the different parts of that are.
This is way better than what I got in
seriously
as a kid.
I went to a career expo, but if I did, I don't remember it because
I remember
it was
a car crash,
not near as exciting.
I just remember getting brochures, lots of brochures, but.
Didn't get
to see anything in action.
Yeah. And then we give the kids work on a 4-year plan to get through high school. I didn't have any kind of plan going through high school except to not flunk out. Basically,
that's
was my
a good
plan.
That's
not it worked.
I think that's number one on the plan list.
It worked. Yeah. I didn't flunk out. So
yeah. So they make 4-year plans when they're in 8th grade.
Wow.
And so that's kind of the idea to do this for 8th graders is to help them, in conjunction with that, to be thinking about what it is they might want to do once they leave school, and how they can kind of connect what they're doing now to their future careers, because they're going to need education and, you know, you need work ethic and all that good stuff to get where you want to be.
So imagine the possibilities October 6th and 7th at the Bancorp South Arena. Emma, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, let's now welcome in another journalite, longtime journalite. We won't say how long. Joe Rutherford, editorial page editor. If you have an opinion, he wants to know about it. Joe, how you doing?
I'm fine, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us on this show, Joe.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you. And every once in a while, we let Joe out of the office to go write a story. And he was
back in your office.
he was at Reed's Gumtree Bookstore earlier this week to visit with former Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour, who has a book out. It's called America's Great Storm, and it's about Hurricane Katrina. Of course, Barbour was governor at the time that that struck 10 years ago. So tell us a little bit, Joe, first, just about the book. What's kind of the gist of it?
The book is a great chronicle from the governor's view about preparing for the storm and then realizing afterward that nobody could have prepared for the kind of storm it was because the devastation was so far greater than anyone had anticipated. And then it's a very good record, personalized, of Mississippi's and Mississippians' response to that storm and the beginning of recovery, which actually, as he says many times, began the day after the hurricane hit.
And this was pretty early in his during his tenure, his first term.
So yes, it was.
This was a big thing to deal with.
It was less than 2 years into his first term, and as he has said many times, that caused changes in his schedule or plans for what could be and should be done in Mississippi because so many resources had to be devoted to Katrina recovery.
Right. And what way did that kind of long-term affect his governorship? I mean, obviously, he got elected to another term, so I think on the whole, it seemed people are happy with the way he handled things.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, and there are some people who would quibble with some things and some people who had serious disagreements about some policy decisions, but Barbour was ideally positioned by his previous career as a very successful Washington lobbyist to go to D.C. Following the storm and work with our congressional delegation and with all the other scores of people who were decision makers in Washington and inside the Capitol. And as he says, this was the ended up being the largest appropriation in the history of the country for a response to a natural disaster. And he's very, very proud of that for the people of Mississippi and the role that he was able to play in that.
And, of course, the 10-year anniversary of Katrina is coming up in just a few days. And I guess, Haley, you know, 10 years later, kind of reflecting on that in your conversations with him, what's kind of his perspective on that, on the whole thing, 10 years removed from it, from a personal standpoint?
I think his personal view is that the recovery has been very impressive so far because the coast in the main was all in from the get-go on the recovery. And he pointed out in his remarks and in my conversation with him that the six bottom counties, as he calls it, the three on the coast and the three directly above them, actually have gained population since Katrina hit 10 years ago this coming Saturday. And there were predictions that there would be a mass permanent exit from those counties after the storm. Well, there was a mass exit, but only until people could catch their breath and turn around and go back.
Right.
And he said the growth, of course, is north of I-10 because south of I-10 was the real zone of destruction.
Yeah.
And he said people are being cautious about rebuilding, especially residential properties south of I-10. He's going to be on the coast this weekend. He said that he has 3 consecutive days of book signings and other events to mark the anniversary, and I think he's looking forward to that.
Yeah, so he's got that book tour. And, you know, at one time not too long ago, Haley Barbour was someone you looked at as a real legit presidential candidate for the Republican Party. Obviously, that's not going to happen in 2016. What's kind of his political future? Is he just kind of past all that? What's he up to?
I think he remains intensely interested in the future of the Republican Party. He didn't tell me for whom he will vote or the person he's supporting in the nomination process, but he is involved and he's keeping up. Haley is 68, and so his days as a candidate in practical terms are limited. He will continue to play a very senior statesman slash operative role, because he knows everyone of importance in the Republican Party. And those of us who have known Haley on a personal basis for a long time, as I have, know that Haley genuinely never meets a stranger. He remembers the people he meets. He has a golden touch in terms of politics, and he never, ever goes into any situation unprepared. And that is the secret of his success. And as long as he has his mind and can think ahead, he will be involved in the Republican Party.
And that book by Haley Barbour, again, is America's Great Storm, looking back at Hurricane Katrina. And Joe Rutherford, editorial page editor, appreciate you taking some time with us today.
Thank you, Brad.
Well, moving from storms to my favorite subject, food, we have food reporter Jenna Parsons here with us today. Jenna, how are you doing?
I'm good.
I want to talk to you about your cook of the week, but I have to ask first about bacon-wrapped cream cheese stuffed chicken breasts. And when I say ask, I have to ask, why do I not have any in front of me?
Where's
would be my question.
Yes, why didn't you bring
them? I actually made them again night before last after I wrote the column because it made me hungry for them.
Yeah, your column is on that. Where did you track down this recipe?
The one that is in the paper is one that Charlie found off of a blog. And we do these fairly often, but we forget about them. Something like a stuffed chicken breast is really easy to make. You can make it in advance. You can make it the night before, put it in the refrigerator, bring it out and bake it. They're pretty for guests. And you can stuff them with just about anything. They almost always have cheese. But you can be a little more healthy with them and stuff them with something like spinach instead of cream cheese.
Why would you do that?
I know. Why would you?
I mean, when you see bacon, you just go ahead and put bacon on it.
Yes, and as I said in the column, the recipe says you can wrap them with either one or two pieces, but that's a no-brainer.
This almost looks like something even I can make, and I can't even cook, but it looks simple enough.
My husband Charlie usually pounds the chicken, and that's the hardest part. Actually, rolling them up and putting it together takes about 5 minutes.
Well, that's I'm drooling on the microphone now, so I'm looking forward to tracking down this recipe, and you can find it today in today's food section of your Daily Journal or online at djournal.com. Shifting gears a little bit, every week Jenna has a cook of the week that most of the time you, the reader, suggest to her, or she tracks down herself.
Right. No, readers call in, they email, they send faxes, and usually it's someone whose food they enjoy, their mother, their teacher, their daughter, daughter-in-law, their child, their preacher's wife, and they just write and say, I know a really good cook, and I think she'll share, or he will share some recipes.
Yeah.
And today's cook, Carol Bearden, I actually know because she's a master gardener, and I'm a master gardener. I'm not very active right now, but hope to get back into that. And so I had met her first through master gardening and then realized later that she had been nominated as a cook of the week.
Oh, great. So she's kind of got an interesting backstory as far as health issues go.
Yes, she's had several surgeries, but the first thing she said to me when I got to the house was, you know, I don't let what's my health get me down or keep me down. She's got two little grandchildren, grandsons that are the light of her life, and I think she lives for them and to play with them and take care of them, please them, visit with them when she can. They don't live in town. But yeah, Carol is amazing, and she cooks 5 days a week. Her husband also cooks, but she just enjoys it. She goes to tried and true recipes. As she says, she doesn't do anything fancy. If it's got a lot of ingredients, it's not for her. But still, everything that she prepares is really, not only is it delicious because I ate with her, but it's pretty too.
What's her go-to recipes that she shared with you?
She did a strawberry salad that had spinach and a homemade poppy seed dressing. And she did a chicken salad that is like none I've ever had. It's got curry in it. And I brought a sample of it back, and two or three people in the newsroom had a taste, and I barely got home with any. I'm sorry, Derek, you must not have been at your desk that day.
What's the good in you sitting right next to me if I'm not getting any of this?
The strawberry cake that she makes, She has three sons, and when it comes birthday time, that's what everybody wants is her strawberry cake. So it's a little decadent, but it only comes out on special occasions.
So she reserves it for those. It sounds like she's really actively involved still, does a lot with empty bowls. And
she does, and with Master Gardening and worked on the cookbook. She's an all-around good girl.
That's great. Have you got your next one lined up for
I do.
Next Wednesday?
I do. I will be interviewing her on this Friday, and we'll read about her next Wednesday.
All right.
I can tell you this. She is an ice cream maker, and not just your average ice cream.
So we'll be expecting some ice cream in the office soon.
Well, I don't know if she's going to send me with any, but I think the one that she's going to make for the picture is a margarita ice cream.
I think you'll be bringing some.
Just tell her if she wants a nice story
I think
done.
The requirement is you get a story.
I'll see what I can
do. We get the food. All right, Jenna Parsons, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, hey, let's talk more politics. Tuesday we had primary runoff elections in the region and around the state, and locally speaking, one race in Lee County, Tony Roper defeating Danny Barrows in the Lee County District 3 Supervisor Republican primary runoff. That's a mouthful. But Tony Roper, with 61% of the vote, he'll advance to the general election in November. And we also had one state house district race, District 36, and that involved Carl Gibbs and Jimmy Davidson. Carl Gibbs victorious in that Democratic primary runoff with almost 58% of the vote. And Gibbs won a special election 2 years ago, succeeding his late father, who held the office until he died in January of 2013. So we're going to bring in Bobby Harrison, our Capitol Bureau reporter down in Jackson. Give us a little insight on what happened on Tuesday. Bobby, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? I'm doing well, and it was really an uneventful runoff. There was a handful of legislative runoffs, including only one in Northeast Mississippi, which you referred to already. Now, I guess the stage is set for November, where the statewide elections, the legislative contest, and, of course, Initiative 42, that will enhance funding for education, enhance the state's commitment to fund education, and some legislative races where the Democrats try to regain control of the House, which they lost 4 years ago. The Republicans now control the House for the first time since Reconstruction since the 1800s, and the Democrats have to pick up probably about 9 or 10 seats to regain control.
Right.
Carl Gibbs, that race, he has no opposition in November, so he's won. I mean, that was a race the Democrats expected to win, and well, of course, you expect to win when you don't have opposition from the other side. But
yes, you do.
Yeah.
And we're going to get to some more races in a minute. First, let's talk about the Initiative 42. I mean, there's been a big push for that the last several months, and that's going to be one of the big things to watch come November. You know, this is kind of a partisan issue, although it seems like when it comes to the educators in the state, most of them seem behind it, and from that standpoint, Bobby, I guess it becomes less of a partisan issue, at least in that environment.
I would say that's right. The folks who worked to get the initiative on the ballot, to get the signatures needed to get the initiative on the ballot, they now go by 42 for Better Schools. They would say they have Republican and Democratic support, or you know, Republican stronghold Rankin County down in Jackson. I mean, there are a lot of folks in Rankin County that signed the petition, a lot of folks in Madison County, another Republican stronghold, a suburb of Jackson. But the opposition comes primarily from Republicans, particularly Republican leadership of the House and Senate. And you know, for the first time in history, they put an alternative to the citizen-sponsored initiative on the ballot, which they have the right to do under the law. They can propose an alternative. So when we go to vote in November, you got to kind of, if you want to be an educated voter, you got to kind of bone up before you get to the ballot box, because you can vote FAR Initiative 42, which enhances the state's commitment to public education. You can vote for the alternative, which the proponents of Initiative 42 says doesn't do much more than what is already existing law in Mississippi, or you can vote for neither one. Now, what we actually decide when we go to the polls to vote in November is whether we want to change the state constitution. Mississippi, like every state in the nation, has a section of its constitution where it makes a commitment to public education. But the people who understand those things say the Mississippi Constitution probably is one of the language in the Mississippi Constitution is probably some of the weaker language in this nation. In other words, our commitment to public education is, as spelled out by the Constitution, is weaker than in most other states. Right. Now, so what Initiative 42 attempts to do is to strengthen that language, but it's going to be all out. The opponents of Initiative 42, the particularly the legislative leadership, says it if it passes, it takes the responsibility to fund education away from the legislature. You know, we all learn in ninth grade civics that the legislature appropriates money, but the supporters of Initiative 42 says it won't take the funding responsibility away from the legislature. It'll just give people who feel education has been shortchanged, it'll give them more options to go to court, like in other states, to say, and a judge to say, hey, you're not meeting your commitment, meet that commitment. Yeah. Now, the backdrop of this is since 2008, education in Mississippi has been underfunded about $1.7 billion, which is, by anybody's definition, is a sizable chunk of money.
What's really an interesting angle to this, to me, Bobby, is, you know, I can't predict if this Initiative 42 is going to pass. I don't know how deeply the support runs, but I do know that when people go to the polls in November to vote on governor, lieutenant governor, etc., there'll be a lot of people voting for Phil Bryant and Tate Reeves who are expected to win. But I think a lot of those same people will vote for Initiative 42, which is something Bryant and Reeves and some other Republican leaders are not in favor of. Is would that be an educated guess about what might happen?
That's not an educated guess. That's a great observation. If the Initiative 42 is to prevail and to pass, they're going to have to get votes from people who vote for Phil Bryant and Tate Reeves. Phil Bryant's going to win re-election easily. Of course, you know, some people are excited about his, you know, opponent, which is an unlikely opponent.
Robert Gray, yeah.
Truck driver who won the, who came out of nowhere to win the Democratic primary back in early August. He even confessed that, he put his name on the ballot, but he didn't actually go to the polls to vote for himself during the first primary. But he won the primary, most people think, because he was the first name on the ballot for a weak field of Democratic candidates. So, you would expect Phil Bryant, unless it's one of the biggest upsets in all of politics and all of elections throughout the country and in the country's history. Tim Johnson, a former state senator, former Republican state senator and former supervisor in Madison County, is running as a Democrat against Tate Reeves, and he may give Tate Reeves a little better race than Phil Bryant is going to have. But to answer your original question, yes, the Initiative folks are going to have to get votes from people who go to the polls vote for Tate Reeves and Phil Bryant.
And, you know, again, we expect those two gentlemen to retain office. Looking around the state and the region, what are a couple of races that really stick out to you we're going to have to keep an eye on in November?
Yeah, well, on the state level, most people expect Attorney General Jim Hood, a Houston native from right there in the northeast Mississippi. Matter of fact, he's actually has an office in Houston where he does a good bit of his work as AG. He's the only Democrat statewide elected official, and he has most people expect his opponent, Mike Hurst, a former assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Mississippi, to give him a good race. He's well-funded, and he's aggressive, and he's going, and the Republicans are going after Hood. Now, the Republicans have been going after Hood now for about, this will be the third or fourth election where they've really gone after Hood, high, and he's always won by comfortable margins. I mean, he's in those past elections, he's proven to be, exceedingly strong in a state that is almost completely Republican now. So we'll see what happens this November on the, you know, as I said earlier, the outside the initiative elections that are going to be most closely watched are legislative elections. And there's several in Northeast Mississippi that could determine the outcome, the control of the House. There's, you know, Prentiss County, Alcorn County, Tishomingo County, Itawamba County over in Oxford. There's several races where Democrats believe they have a candidate who will challenge Republican incumbents. And if the Democrats can win those elections and a handful of others in other areas of the state, they could regain control of the House. But as I think I wrote in a column a few months ago, to do that, they, you know, in poker, do you play poker?
Not very often.
In poker terms, they just about have to draw an inside straight to do that. So, I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility, but everything would have to go right for them, I think, for the Democrats to regain control of the House. But they, right now, they're optimistic, believe they have a shot. So we'll see. That's why they, as they say, that's why they hold the elections.
That's right, Bobby. Bobby Harrison, our Capitol Bureau reporter. Follow him on Twitter at Bobby Harrison 9. Bobby, appreciate you taking some time with us today.
All right. Enjoyed it.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye-bye.
I want to thank Bobby Harrison for joining us today. And Brad, thank you as always for being on.
Well, hey, it's fun. It's always fun.
We'll be back again on Thursday with another episode of the Gatherings of Northeast Mississippi.
Yes.
Brad, and, you on the Twitter then?
I'm on the Twitter at Brad Locke, and now the memo is on the Twitter.
The memo is on the Twitter, at DJournalMemo.
Yes.
At DJournalMemo. Our producer, Chris Kiefer, joining us also on the Twitter at Chris Kiefer, and I am at W. Derek Russell. Our home on the internet is, of course, DJournal.com, which is the official website of the Daily Journal newspaper here in Northeast Mississippi. And we'll see you again later this week. Thanks, everyone.